south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Man, it never fails. Every single time I talk about sex, love, romance, mating, dating here in Latin America, I get tons of people sending me emails with all kinds of comments and saying, More, give me more. If I've said it once, I've said it a million times. I could have a whole other show just on love, mating, dating, sex, romance in Latin America. Well, then why don't I do it? Well, I know one thing, it would certainly be a hell of a success. But hey, there's only so many hours in the day. And doing a show like that's way down on my to-do list. I know, it'd be a lot of crazy fun, but I'd probably have to go extreme incognito in a bulletproof vest and helmet. Because I know, radical gringa feminists would definitely put a hit out on me. Just for telling the truth, telling it like it is. Isn't that a shame? A lot of podcasters I know are self-censoring now. Used to be a couple of years ago in a more innocent age, all those podcasters cared about was likes and clicks. Now they're worried about getting canceled. Then again, some fools deserve to be canceled. I mean, really, when you've got no talent, and 14 of your 15 minutes of fame are up, you deserve to be shit-canned. Then again, if you're in California or Hollywood and can play the victim card, you could have a whole new second career as a bloviating, wokester podcast fool. Yeah, there's a pretty big rainbow, non-binary podcast community contingency out there. But wait a minute. We were talking about sex, love, romance, mating, and dating in Latin America, right? So then let's get to a couple of these email responses. First one from Mr. D. He says, Johnny, good afternoon. Hope all is well. Before I go into my mini rant, the wife and I are heading back to Guatemala this fall to visit her family and hopefully get out some more and explore. The last time I was with her elderly Guatemalan parents, I think they dragged us to every church in Antigua, Guatemala. This time around, however, I'm going to take more photos and measurements of their home so we can start getting ideas on how to fix up that house. So, Johnny, if you happen to be around and you see a 50-something gringo at the airport crying and repeating over and over that he doesn't want to go back to the States, well, that just might be me. Anyway, Johnny, in a recent episode, I just have to say that Latina lady living up in the U.S. sounding off to you sounded very, very high maintenance and problematic herself. She talked a lot about what she wants in a man, but not once did she ever mention what she could bring to a relationship. In fact, her rant, he says, reminded me of one of your shows from October 2018, where what sounded to be a very toxic woman, a gringo lady, of course, sounded up. She was responding and vomiting her feelings on gringos going online, scolding first world men going on those sites looking for ladies. Somehow it didn't click with her, nor did she comprehend the reason American guys go on those Latina dating sites is precisely because of the problems they have with women like her. Then he says, and now a little comment about show number 1229, Friday, March 24th, 2023. He says that email you read about wokeness in the military, written by a military soldier. Oh my God, was that email spot on or what? The new DIE standards, that means diversity, inclusion, equity, in the military and at my own job now, I can't tell you how ridiculous it is. They now banned certain spoken words, like, for example, brown bag. You can't say that anymore at work. You can't say brown bag, along with many other words. Me Johnny here. Man, am I glad I'm living in Latin America. But wait a minute. Brown bag. You can't say that anymore? What if the bag's white? Can you say white bag? What about old bag? Man, I'm confused. I'd like to know why they would ban the words brown bag. What about a white bag, or red bag, or yellow bag? I bet you can't get scolded for that. Not yet, anyway. Anyway, then he says, at work, they're also trying to get the word chief banned as well. Somehow the word is offensive to Native Americans. He says, somehow I don't think Native Americans ever called their leaders boss. I doubt in the early days they knew much English or Anglo-French. All right, me Johnny here. Yeah, you're right, at least not until Columbus stumbled in. Then he says, I can't believe it. Do you want to know the worst part? And he said, Johnny, we're both old enough to understand this one. The one word they find totally acceptable at work is, wait for it, Johnny, get this, comrade. C-O-M-R-A-D-E. Yep, comrade. That word's perfectly okay, comrade Johnny. He says, you just can't make this shite up. Again, it's time to get the hell out. I'm so glad I have a plan B. Well, thanks for that, Mr. D. But it's funny. You never know how good it is to get the hell out of Dodge until you've got some boots on the ground, way out of Dodge. That's when you really know, you're really convinced there's a different, low-key, more normal world out there. People can talk about it, and you can hear about it here, but there's nothing like seeing it for yourself. Yep, even if your Spanish sucks. So as for all you guys and gals up there sitting on the fence in Wokesville, USA, and Wokesville, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and Europe too, before you judge anything having to do with Latin America, you've got to get some quality boots on the ground off the gringo tourist trail. I don't want to hear about how you think you've got Latin America pegged because you visited Cancun or Costa Rica. Or maybe you popped off for a day in Tulum or Belize because you're on a cruise. Not only does that not count, you lose points for it. It's like telling your social media friends you're in Paris while taking a selfie in front of that fake Eiffel Tower in Vegas. All right, here's another fun and informative story from the email stack. This is from our long-term expat pal, Roberto, living in Oaxaca, Mexico, otherwise known as Oaxaca Bob. He writes in the subject box on this email, quote, local renters dismember corpse. Meanwhile, my landlord's out of control. Interesting. Let's see how those two things relate. He says, dear Johnny, the Oaxacan state detectives, the police, questioned me and my errant 72-year-old sex-addicted landlord this weekend regarding one of his recently disappeared, meaning missing, tenants. He says the missing renter was a local Mexican dude who entertained people, often very late into the night. He was the cause of a lot of relatively lively nighttime traffic. People would come and go through the side entrance of our gated little community. Made the wife awful suspicious. The guy was often seen darting off into the blackness at high speed on what my wife figured could be nothing but drug business. Anyway, when the guy officially went missing, us four gringo renters in this complex ended up with his two dogs. Out of sympathy, hell, they had to eat. Meanwhile, 4 days later, a dismembered corpse turned up, dumped in a burlap bag unceremoniously on a barrio sidewalk. Same guy? Maybe? Maybe not. Dismembered bodies can be funny like that. Anyway, the cops showed up here at my doorstep about a week ago. A sloth-like detective and his lard-ass assistants, plus some of the family members of the guy gone missing. And the conversation focused right in on a guy I know. Victor, my landlord. Apparently, an obvious suspect. Amongst other things, they asked me for his phone number. When I said I didn't know it, the entourage camped out on Victor's doorstep, immediately opposite my property. Well, I lied. I stepped into the house, called Victor, and told him the detectives were at his house. His immediate response, do they want to arrest me? And of course I replied, no. Say. Of course, in Spanish, no means no, but no. Say means, how the hell do I know? By the way, me Johnny here now. That's a very good phrase to know, especially if you're a fresh green gringo and your Spanish sucks. No say. It'll get you out of lots of needless banter that you wouldn't understand anyway. Just use the phrase, no say. That's two words, you know, N-O-S-E. By the way, there's a very famous, kind of rough around the edges gringo bar in Antigua, Guatemala, whose name happens to be Cafe No Say. In fact, it should be on your list if you're out and about in Antigua, Guatemala. Just saying. But I digress as usual. Anyway, then Victor said, tell the cops I'll be there in 30 minutes. Which, of course, could be a couple hours in real time, otherwise known as mañana time. Then our on-the-spot expat, Oaxaca Bob, says, of course, I was burning with curiosity at this local Latin drama unfolding that apparently had gone south. So I went across the way and interrupted the cops as they were grilling the yard guy. I said, surprise, surprise, I found Victor's phone number and called him. He said he's on his way. Well, guess what? Victor did show up an hour later. And the detectives grilled him for another good hour. And since they didn't cuff him or haul him off, I assume, today anyway, all is cool in the neighborhood. However, more than likely, the plot will thicken, but not until mañana. All right, reading on. Finally, Oaxaca Bob says, such is random day-to-day life here in our little failed state, Disneyland. Here in Oaxaca, anyway, it's cartel light. We're just a little too laid back and off the beaten trail for any serious cartel action. Not yet, anyway. That's all for now, Johnny. P.S. Speaking of getting serious, it's that time of day once again to stop and stare at a seriously spectacular sunset. All right, Bob, thanks for that. It's always good hearing from you. All right, let's yank the wheel a bit here. You know, ever since I started this show some 11 or 12 years ago now, people keep asking me the same old question that never stops. How can I bring my gold to Central or South America without getting tripped up in America or my Latin American destination with that $10,000 limit rule? If you've done any international flying, you know. You have to report on that little immigration form if you're carrying more than $10,000 in whatever. Cash or cash equivalents, meaning gold, silver, platinum checks. Though, if you read the guidelines, you'll see it's not all that well spelled out. Meaning crypto wallets and tokens and such are in a pretty gray area. For example, what if you have a hot wallet on your laptop, computer, or cell phone? And it's just loaded with crypto, but of course, no one knows that but you. Or if you happen to have a cold wallet on you, like a Nano or a Trezor. As you can see, things do get murky. And I have to tell you, there was a time way back when, if you were carrying gold or silver coins or bullion, you just blew right through customs. And if anyone would ask you, just tell them you're going to a coin show. Perfectly satisfactory. Matter of fact, back in the 90s, I once carried a box with 200 one-ounce gold coins and 100 one-ounce platinum coins in a little box. I flew with it from Chicago to London. Even back then, before there were any kind of scanners or metal detectors, they said, what you got there? And I said, my coin collection. They looked at it once or twice for 5 or 10 seconds, and that was it. In fact, I remember one customs guy said, my grandpa had a really nice coin collection. I wish I would have taken up that hobby myself. Now, back then, if I recall, when you had to fill out that little customs form, they didn't have anything about gold or precious metals. It was all about cash and checks and cash equivalent instruments. The limit was still 10,000 bucks, but it was a different world back then, before 9/11. And slightly before we realized the U.S. was totally bankrupt, too. Now, back in the early 90s, and I just looked this up, the value of a dollar then was equivalent to $2.30 now. In other words, since then, there's been inflation of 130% in the U.S. money supply. So today, when that little form says, you must report if you're taking more than 10,000 bucks in cash equivalents or precious metals. Well, for example, if you're traveling with exactly 10 grand today, that's like in the early 90s traveling with $4,300. That's how much your government has destroyed the purchasing power of a dollar. But here's the point, that $10,000 limit has been in effect for at least 30 years now, and it's never been indexed for inflation. Technically, all things being equal, that amount should be $23,000. Just to make it equivalent to the original $10,000 limit they had in the 90s. But they don't index it for inflation, which is an insidious way of the government steadily ratcheting down the amount of money you could take out of the country privately without reporting it. So think about it. If you take out the absolute limit without reporting, that would be $10,000. That's like $4,300 in early 1990s U.S. fiat funny money. If that isn't bad enough, what happens if you happen to have, let's say, $11,000? If you don't report it on that little form, and they search you, and they just might, they'll just take it, and you've got no recourse. Even if you're really sneaky and stealthy at hiding it in your luggage or whatever, they just might find it. Well, you know, U.S. funny money has those little metallic-tinged Mylar strips. So if you have enough of them, the scanner will pick them up. Oh, and by the way, if you do report what you have because you're over the limit, what then? Because that's what you're supposed to do, right? If you got more than 10K, report it. I know of a few people that's happened to. Then, the customs a-holes will make you produce paperwork that shows the origin of those funds. For example, just having a printout of your own bank statements, if, for example, you got the money cash out of your own bank, might not be enough to satisfy. They'll want to know the earlier origin of that money, how it got made before it got deposited into your bank account. Plus, they'll ask you, why do you have it and what are you going to use it for? But you knew that already, right? Now, personally, on a couple of occasions, I've carried $9,500 through the airport. Though when I have, I've always been a little nervous about it. Ever since that little story Mr. B told us a while back, I read his email on the show. You longtime listeners might recall, he was coming to Guatemala with his wife and two young kids by way of Houston Airport. Turns out he had $6,600 on him. Well, below the 10K limit, right? Well, something happened to him at the airport. Same things happened to me a couple of times. Something strange, something off-putting. Normally, you walk up to the ticket handler, get your boarding pass, drop off your stowed luggage and all that. You go through a bunch of checkpoints. They scan and sometimes stamp your passport. Then you got to take your belts and backpacks and carry-ons and shoes off. You got to stick everything you're carrying in a plastic box, shove it through the x-ray machine. You go through the metal detector, the pat-down, the body scan, whatever. All the while, the TSA treat you like shit. They prod you through like cattle. You end up in an end-of-the-line traffic jam. You put yourself back together. You put on your shoes, your belt, and if you're a guy or a tranny, adjust your jock strap. Take a deep breath and a sigh of relief. Because finally, you can head to your final destination, your departure gate. Now, more and more, when you get to your final gate, the TSA guys will have a little makeshift station set up, and they'll go through your shite once again. Now, of course, there's absolutely no need to do that, because they've done it already. It just seems they want to use the artificial power they have, because they got no power in their lives anyplace else but the airport. Now, doesn't it always seem to go like that? You give a room temperature IQ slug a uniform. And soon enough, he starts to swagger and throw his weight around. You know, righteous rent-a-cop syndrome. And man, was that alive and well during the COVID lockdowns, huh? Those lardasses had the power to let you in and out of a place based on your mask and whether it covered your nose or not. Boy, if there was a way to get even, man, huh? Anyway, occasionally these days, there'll be a second ad hoc TSA check right when you're at your gate. And that's just what happened to Mr. B and his wife and his two little kids when at the Houston airport on their way to Guatemala. They asked him how much money he was carrying. He said $6,600. Well, they got tough and said, if you have $6,600 and you're 300 under or 300 over, we're taking it from you. They counted the money. It was exactly $6,600. Sure, it was totally abusive and uncalled for, but you're at the mercy of dyed-in-the-wool dickheads. Outside the airport, they're just pot-bellied slugs. Inside the airport, they have absolute power. But I digress. What else is new? Now, the thing about taking gold, silver, platinum, coins, or bullion through the airport, that's getting more and more dicey, too. And now, with gold at around $2,000 an ounce, that means you can really only take 4 ounces through safely. Because at today's prices, 5 ounces of gold will take you slightly over the $10,000 limit. Though in the old days, they never enforced much of a limit. As long as they were American Eagles or Canadian Maple Leafs, because they said $50 stamped right on them. Years ago, if you were using that argument, you had a leg to stand on, but not anymore. Now, here's the thing. The other day, I was in a discussion with a very cool expat wannabe. A guy with a decent amount of gold who wants to get it out of the country and down here to Latin America. And he made the comment that you could take just about any amount of gold jewelry with you through airport customs as long as you're wearing the stuff. We're talking about men. Guys with penises going through the airport wearing bling. Man, I'll tell you, I've seen it in action. I've been on planes where guys, mostly American black guys and American Latinos, they got so much bling on their hands, necks, and wrists, even their teeth. Too bad they don't require an IQ test to get on a plane. I mean, really, what's the minimum IQ necessary to figure out the more bling you wear on a third world vacation, the bigger the bullseye on your head? Then again, it seems people with low IQs and low self-esteem value their perceived coolness and street cred factor more than they value their personal safety. But there I go digressing again. The salient point here is you can carry all kinds of jewelry through the airport as long as you're wearing it. And ladies, you can wear it and have a big stash of it in your purse and carry on. And no one will say a word. Now, of course, we all know jewelry isn't pure. It's 10, 12, 14, or 18 carat, sometimes 20 or 22 carat. Like, for example, in India, it's almost all 20 and 22 carat, because people prefer to wear their wealth other than put it in a bank. Man, that's forward thinking, huh? That's a topic for a different discussion, but smart people, even not so smart people, are starting to figure out keeping a big chunk of your wealth in a bank is not a good idea. Besides that, people always think their jewelry's worth more than it really is. Let's say, for example, you pay $1,000 for a 14 carat gold necklace. When you sell it, and it's almost always under duress, right? You need the money. That's how it works. That's why pawn shops exist. All right, let's say you go into a pawn shop with a 14-karat gold necklace you paid $1,000 for. Well, he's going to weigh it and pay you by the gram. And a gram of 14-karat gold today's price is around $38. By the way, I just checked out a $1,000 14-karat gold necklace, no frills. It's got about 10 grams of 14-karat gold in it. That means if you bought it today for $1,000 and took it to a pawn shop tomorrow, they'd give you $38 a gram. 100 grams, they give you $380, about a third of what you paid for it the day before. The dealer doesn't give one damn how special or how unique or one of a kind you think it is. He's going to give you $38 a gram. And the only way you're going to get more than that is if it's a true antique. And it's got to be a certain kind of antique you could look up in a blue book. Fat chance that happens to you or me. So then what am I getting at? Well, I just found out myself from an astute expat wannabe. There happens to be a company, actually a couple of companies, but one called M-E-N-E Gold Company. That's M-E-N-E.com. That sells, get this, nothing but 24-karat gold jewelry. That means it's pure gold, 24-karat. And if you take it to a pawn shop or anywhere that buys and sells gold, they'll give you $65 a gram. That's today's spot price on 24-karat gold. Now, here's the thing. If you go to that website, M-E-N-E.com, they sell some big-ass heavy chains and bracelets because they know some people and cultures like to carry their wealth with them. And 24-karat gold by weight is worth a hell of a lot more than 14, 18, 20, or 22. Therefore, it's a lot more compact than 14, 18, or 22. You could wear a lot more of it and carry a lot more wealth around with you. For example, I'm looking at a solid gold chain here right now. It's 300 grams, 24-karat gold. The cost, about $28,000. Meaning today, if you bought it for $28,000 and tomorrow you took it to a pawn shop, they'll give you $65 a gram. That's $20,000. In other words, instead of losing two-thirds of your investment by walking out the door, if you're buying, let's say, 14-karat gold, with this 24-karat gold chain, you're only losing less than a third of the value. Not great, right? But much better. Of course, the point is not to buy it today and sell it tomorrow, but to hold on it in the long run because gold is going up. There's no doubt about it. It's going up now and will continue to do so. I'm a gold bug myself. I've always been one. And I haven't been wrong. I bought a whole hell of a lot of it at $265 many years ago. Lost a whole hell of a lot of it from a girlfriend who stole it from me. If we ever meet up, I'll tell you that story in person someday. But let me throw these numbers out for you in case you're curious. She stole 200 ounces of gold and 100 ounces of platinum. Yep, I know. I should be crying myself to sleep every single night of my life. But I'm not. Oh, I won't lie. I had some really bad nights when it first happened. Then, you know, Bitcoin came along. And as so many other Bitcoiners, I got myself caught up in a swindle there too. And a guy stole 70 Bitcoin from me. 70. I know, I should be crying myself to sleep every night after that fiasco too, right? Or maybe join a Jesus cult or something. Hey, do the numbers. At today's price, it's only $2 million. But, you know, even now, that Bitcoin loss did not affect me as much as getting that gold and platinum stolen. But back then in the 90s, I was a lot stupider, especially when it came to women. What a dummy, huh? But still, if I had to do it over, I wouldn't change a thing because any little change you make in your past life would change your ultimate trajectory completely. And I'm doing pretty good right now, and I have been for a long time. At least I think I am, and that's all that counts, right? The thing is, though, when it comes to crypto, everyone I know who got in early was scammed or ripped off somewhere along the way. It's part of the learning curve. Could be worse. Could be a lot worse. Bitcoin Dan got 2,000 Bitcoin stolen by one of his employees, one of the guys he hired. At today's price, that's $56 million. Oh, man. However, that was a long time ago, back in maybe 2014, when it was only $500. By the way, that ripoff artist was a real smooth operator. He got Dan and me and so many others. So it's not a sob story, really. It's just what happens when you're an early adopter. Yeah, and you know, in the 80s, I learned to invest in the stock market, too. I learned the old-fashioned way, by giving it to a broker and letting him lose my money. But, you know, to me, the key to life, if you want to call it success or not, is perseverance. You just keep plugging away, trying new things. One or two of them are bound to hit. Now, back to this business about wearing your wealth on your hands, your neck, and your wrist. Just that little example I gave you of the 24-karat gold chain proves you could defeat that $10,000 rule. Though you pay almost a third more in spot price. Some can tolerate that, some with a long vision. The point is to hang on to it as long as you can. Years, perhaps. Now, as for my take on gold, I think for sure In the next few years, it's going to hit 4,000 or 5,000. In other words, a double or more. The point is, wearing it is a way to ferret it out of the country without having to worry about the problem you'll have with coins and bullion. Especially if you use a company like this MENE gold, it's 24 karat, 99.99% pure, which means that stuff's instantly convertible to cash at a pawn shop or any place they buy or sell gold. Now, think of it. You throw a couple of those things around your neck. You could easily just walk through the airport with $100,000 worth of gold. No questions asked. No one will bother you. So, just in case you're into gold and were wondering, you've got some options besides trying to bring a couple of coins through. The other recommendation is, if you've got a big stash of gold in Canada or the US, my advice, don't try to ship it down. They'll kill you on the import taxes. I know some people who've tried to do it and it's not worth it. Of course, I'm talking about over the $10,000 amount. Because, you know, if you've got a few one-ounce coins, you can always bring them through in your pocket. But remember, at today's prices, the safe limit's about 4 1-ounce coins. You know, Kugrands, Maple Leafs, American Eagles. Sure, you can try for more than 4 at a time. I know people who've gotten in 5, 10, even 20 one-ounce coins. But there's always a risk involved. Though, as you might figure, they're not going to put you in jail or charge you. They're just going to keep them. That's why my advice has always been, sell your gold coins right now, up in the States or Canada, whatever. Convert it to Bitcoin, put it on a cold wallet. You can bring those things back and forth all day long. Or don't carry your cold wallet with you at all. Just know your 24 or 12 word key. Then, when you get down to Latin America, recreate the physical hard wallet. If you don't feel like moving your wealth around that way, you could sell your gold up in the States or Canada, wire transfer that dough down to your bank account in Guatemala, Salvador, whatever, or wire it to your trusted Latin lawyer, then rebuy your gold when you get down here. There are gold dealers and pawn shops down here, and there are always people on the internet, in the forums, online, buying and selling gold coins and bullion too. Though, as for me, I never recommend buying bullion, always the coins, because with bullion, people are worried about the weight, the worth, and the purity. The stuff has to be assayed, whereas coins, no. All you need is a cell phone to do the ping test. You longtime listeners have heard me talk about that. You download a ping program for free, balance that gold coin using something like a pencil eraser, and just give it a little tap with a fork or a knife. The app will pick up the frequency of the sound and tell you if it's a real gold coin or fake. There are lots of really good fakes out there, you know, and they're all coming from guess where? China.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.